The Allegory of the Cave. Philosophers are always 10 times smarter than we think. The moment you understand something the philosopher said, the moment you see the vulnerable human who could have done better if they tried harder, it is just the philosopher lovingly and gently reaching out to help you rise much higher. To get us started, some say that fighting styles and fighting equipment arose from practicing martial arts with work tools or whatever was on hand, so that slaves and peasants could practice unnoticed until they became powerful enough to set themselves free. And considering that victors write history, the allegory of the cave might have just been smuggling a weapon. I leave it up to you to decide. The allegory on its surface asks us to imagine ourselves to have been born chained in a cave, facing a wall where we can only see shadows of what is going on behind us. I must emphasize here that in order to understand the allegory correctly, you have to become one of those trapped in the cave. You must avoid thinking of them as really unfortunate people who are stuck in a cave, as that won't help you understand the allegory. You have to get into it rather than view it from some external perspective. So here, from this miserable position of this unfair existence, we learn what philosophy and her daughters, the sciences, are really for. They are for constructing frameworks and pathways to infer about the source of the shadows, to cast theories that can explain the outside world and what it must look like. The allegory shows who a philosopher is, a gadfly to the state of things, and more than powerful enough to set the world free. Just as soon as the philosopher intuits or infers the outside world, they will aim to set everyone free. Though until those still imprisoned in the cave see it, the philosopher may sound a little bit crazy, mumbling about the skies and the sun. It is a good story that shows philosophers and scientists as great escape artists, or students of reality and great discoveries. They don't need to be told if there are walls around them or not. They will think, dig, and crawl through tunnels because discovery is their business. Now, you may be in high school or maybe even college, cheerfully marching on, looking for an edge to tip the scales for some presentation in philosophy or speech class. Though you want to breeze right through it because you found all education is equally ineffective, there is a small splinter in your mind. It resonates because you understood something, but you don't know where it goes and have no time or space for internet video stuff anyways. At the same time, I think on some conceptual or philosophical level, you know that you are in a cave. If you just shut yourself down and do the chores, you won't get yelled at. If you just keep going forward, the other kids won't notice or ridicule you. And here comes the big one. If you can just cram, the teacher will let you pass. You see, that would be your wall right now. There's more to it, of course. Career and other stuff. It all really does get bigger and somewhat more frightening. But what about behind you? What about the business of discovery? Did you figure out about Socrates yet? He didn't lay down and die worried about some goddamn chicken. He was given a choice. Either he dies or his students are destroyed. That's what happened. He was teaching them things that go against the state. And state needed to put an end to that. Because undoing indoctrination is dangerous. You see, the allegory in the allegory of the cave is very useful packaging. But the cave is a weapon, a powerful tool for thinking. The hole is aimed at undoing your indoctrination, first by example, then by explaining to you what a philosopher is, and finally asking you to, by subtle analogy to the people imprisoned in the cave, undo your indoctrination. To undo your indoctrination and regain your freedom of will, you will have to ask a lot of questions. You will need to spend a short moment at the Walden Pond with Henry. And then you will need to head on to Mount Katahdin. Find the wide blaze and begin walking the Appalachian Trail. You have to hurry to get there, because the longer you spend in the cave, the more you will have to lose before you can walk the trails in full. Once you get to Springer Mountain down in Georgia, you have to prepare to walk the Pacific Crest Trail, and then safely cross the Continental Divide Trail. It will be painful and powerful. It will take years. For some, it will take many years. The three trails are the Triple Crown, and few have even walked it thrice. What is this really, you want to know? You see, or more precisely, you can't see your shackles. It's called an allegory of the cave for a reason. You never see the shackles, and your walls are perfectly invisible. Indoctrination is a prison you don't know you are in. And the stress, doubt, disbelief, poverty and lies will absolutely keep you from reading books that hope to teach you large and integrated lessons. You will simply be unable to follow other philosophers, clear thinkers, and great beings. The Triple Crown is so long to make room in your mind for your intellectual inheritance, for your real education. The thousands of books written by different clear thinkers from different perspectives in hopes of helping you build a bridge from wherever you are now towards growing up, towards growing all the way up, until you too become a great being and make your own lasting contributions to humankind. Plato created the allegory of the cave because he knew your genetic predisposition to trust the elders was going to be used against you. Just like it was being used against all the students of Socrates. They all knew that the world around you would not be exactly real, but rather the world that others want you to see. Many others with many differing interests. Everyone benefits when you sit in that cave. Your cramming in school wasn't a trick you invented. The teacher made the curriculum incomprehensible on purpose to force you to memorize it. Getting you to temporarily regurgitate everything is really easy and quick, and they get paid just the same. Your textbooks are priced to extract the maximum possible price that you will pay. College loans do much the same, but they also include lifelong loans that are unforgivable by bankruptcy. You will be paying them off well into your 60s or worse. They will be extracted from your paycheck by a judge's order, even. The classroom is a cage. Many have to ask for permission to use the restroom. I bet you don't even have to do that in jail. All those rows of students. It ought to feel all wrong. Like you are being hung out to dry or processed like meat in a factory. The 45-minute or hour-long periods prevent you from learning for real. That you have multiple subjects in a day ensures that you will never finish anything, just fudge and cram until you graduate, and the only thing you will remember is that mitochondria is the powerhouse of the cell, and it will sting you. Once you get older, you will figure out that real education was actually stolen from you. You were sold out for little paychecks. Overall, nothing you will learn in high school will be useful to you in life. It will feel that way, but what you know will be what you have learned on your own. It is actually proof that you are brilliant and that the idea of genius is stupid. And it should really bother you that standardized education is the same for all. But we each have different interests and curiosities and pressing questions to answer. Your career that follows is never going to be fully guaranteed, and you will have to fight liars for it. Your crushing debt will make it a matter of survival. Many of your interviews are going to be fake. You will be used as filler material to meet a quota so that some weasel somewhere can get their family members in. Real education is self-directed. You have to choose what you learn and for how long in order for it to stick. Our minds require that in order to grow tiny and brilliant ideas into large and integrated systems. Those will become the contributions that will outlast you. You have to move in your own sequence and at your own speed while following the constellation of your curiosities. Look at Newton. The apple might as well have fallen as he was thinking about the curvature of the earth while admiring the roundness of the moon, understanding that both are similarly shaped. And he must have asked, where would the apple go if I threw it so hard that as it was pulled by gravity down to earth, Earth's curvature would counter that change. Newton, pondering orbital dynamics by shooting apples out of his cannon around Earth. Initially, your ideas will be just as small, but as you expand on them, you'll invent the equivalent of calculus to capture all the motion in your systems. The allegory of the cave is one such idea that Plato worked on. He brought Socrates into the story even. He created something that is alive, that moves. It's a tool. Your idea will be just as powerful, just as precious to your student. But please, you must learn for real to get there. You have to listen to thousands of books on your trails, in your adventures, and in real life, so that you don't start at zero, but rather so that you start at the shoulders of giants, where the great beings left off. Among countless many other things, those books will bring you into the culture of their authors, the superculture, where you will eventually converge with others like you on wisdom and world peace. This is the human culture, the culture of greatness.